Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
I mean, come on, there's a bit of a ridiculous irony that all of those, one for a better word, posh dicks are getting on private jets to Scotland, some of whom have just created tax exemptions for domestic air travel, with at least, like, 15 kids between them. And they've all gathered to talk about climate change because they want me to recognise that maybe having a bacon sandwich on the weekend might be the downfall of society. Are you for real? Hello, hello, hello. Yes. We haven't had one of these in a while, have we? Yes, little round of applause. Why? Largely for just fucking surviving. Nothing else. I mean, no form of entertainment value. Just continuing to breathe on this planet is a marvel. As ever, I'm Scotty. This is After the Tone. And together with my mates, Debbie, Tim, Maya and Kat, we allow you, yes, allow you. You fucking remember that. We allow you, the general public, to start conversations with me. And each other, and the pub, the lounge, the room, I mean, everything and nothing. You can cover any subject here, quite evidently. It's a bit like late night radio for people who like to be in bed at 10 o'clock. It's full of queers, mentals and commoners, so if none of that tickles your fancy, let us know where you live and one of us will be round to piss through your letterbox. Oh, the dark days are here, hun, aren't they? Oh, God. It's the season for waking up. Dark, going to bed dark by 5 o'clock. And so, you know, the dark thoughts follow suit, don't they? No, thank you. Not for me. Now, I bring this up because it's usually about this time of the year that I plummet with the SAD. And we sort of lay in bed very, well, SAD. But worry not, I'm double dosing on the vitamin D. She's having the D, babes, steady. And I'm doing those moving things that make me have chemicals in my body, which I think are supposedly far more productive than the other chemicals I put in my body in the early noughties. So we're okay for now, but I'm cautious. Anybody else? How are you doing, hun? Honestly, it's that thing about when they turn the clocks back, it really fucks you up, doesn't it? Right, before we get to it, I do have to let you know we have got a talent show in a few weeks. And are any of you fucking calling up with your talents? Are any of you fuck? Now, I just have to remind you, it is audio, okay? So you could blag a talent. Like, no one's going to know. Because A, you could make it up as you go along. And B, we have a very loose form of what we think the word talent means over here. So WhatsApp us. That's easy for you to say. So WhatsApp us a voice note to +44 788 200 3420. That number and that reminder will be coming a little bit later in the show. Right, gorgeous. I reckon we should get on with it because, well, otherwise it would just be a fucking monologue for me. And I tell you what, people usually pay for that fucking privilege.
Are you Scotty, Babs? Are you the rest of the team? Just a quick one from Pauline. I've got a song stuck in my head. I don't know what the bugger it is. tried Googling the lyrics. Oh, it's like this. It goes like this. Walk with me, talk with me, love me, but treat me like a woman. I know, it's scary. I know, the talent.
Sorry, well, first off, what the fuck are you on about? It's like it sounded like you were singing a song by Sam Fox in the style of Tina Turner. But more to the point here, Pauline, where the fuck have you been? Where the fuck have you been? We haven't heard head nor tail for you for about 10 episodes, you fucking lazy bitch.
All right, Scotty, producer Deb, Cat, Tim Meyer, it's Big Fat Dyke here. I'm calling again from Russia, but I'm calling because that's the last time I'm going to be able to say that. I'm sat in an empty apartment block, about to move back to the UK after, well, 10 years here, 20 years outside the UK. I'm not going to lie, I'm absolutely shitting myself. I know it's time to come back. I think I've been away for too long, and I really just want to be near my friends and family. But at the same time, I don't know. I just keep looking at all the news that's come out of fucking England over the last 10 years. And I just think, what am I going to come back to? Brexit? Fuck, I don't know. I'm also where we're moving. My wife got a job. It is literally, from what I can tell, in the middle of Brexit Central. So, I guess the reason I'm calling is, how do you, if you move, well, one, what are some nice things about England? What are some things that I can look forward to? I definitely can't wait to get out in the countryside, stuff like that. But yeah, what do people enjoy doing? And also, if you were moving to a new town, particularly one where there may not be people who share your sort of political beliefs or just your view on life, how would you find them? What would you do? Yeah, and also, I think you asked today to share stories of neighbours, so I will share my story of my Soviet fucking crazy neighbour downstairs. So we live in what's called a Brezhnevka. From the outside, they look like your classic depressing Soviet apartment block. 5 stories, maybe 5 or 6 entry doors on each floor. There's 4 flats. And I mean, mine was built in the 70s. And at the time, everybody who lived in this particular apartment block worked in the same factory. And nobody's ever moved. So like the guy we rent from, he grew up here, he's a mate of ours, and he knows every single person on every single floor. And they're all nice. I mean, I can't really chat that much, but you know, there's a woman with the eye patch. There's the guy with 2 dogs that are the size of literally Shetland fucking ponies. God knows how he lives in there. Anyway, everyone's lovely, apart from the fucking crazy woman and her daughter who live below us. And I don't know what she thinks she can hear, but like literally it'll be 11 p.m. and I will drop a paperclip. I'm fucking serious, a paperclip. And within a millisecond, I don't know what she's got, a broom? She's like, boom, 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 on the floor. She must literally be sat down there in her chair with that fucking broom in her hand, waiting to go for it. She's written to the police to complain. She said that I was an illegal immigrant and that we, like, I don't know, loads of shit, that we stored stuff, we were abusive to her. I fucking avoid her as much as I can. She once hugged me in the corridor. I mean, she's off her fucking head. So when we leave tomorrow, I want to leave a sign on their door that says, bye bye, bitches, or something like that. My wife says I should just leave it. But anyway, help me. What should I do? If you were coming back to the UK after a long time, what would be something you would be looking forward to? Apart from, obviously, a fish and chip supper. I won't reveal mine. And a curry. Okay, love you all. Bye.
Big Fat Dyke! Yeah! Now, first off, I just want to say, why didn't you tell us when you first called that you were calling from Russia? Because you know how excited that would make me. People from far away calling in and listening in. Now, I just want to address the elephant in the room here, and that is the fact that you have lived in Russia for 10 years and you're worried about the political climate coming back to the UK. Now, I know here in the European West, we are probably fed a series of news about Russia that might not always 100% be accurate. But I'm pretty sure the politics of Putin, who is, you know, very proud of what he thinks, as you and your wife living in Russia. You can see what I'm getting to here, hon, okay? So I just want to let you know, yeah, it's a bit of a shitstorm over here, hon. But there's part of me that wants to go, but it's not Russia. Oh my God, I love this. I love this so much. So, oh, I totally hear where you're at about moving to a new place. Because, of course, I moved to Manchester, you know, and being, well, listen to sound me. If you don't know what this sounds like, people who are listening to this in other places, basically, I definitely sound like somebody from London. This is what we sound like, okay? So when I moved up here, where they all talk like that, well, they don't because they're not from Yorkshire, but it's a very noticeable change. It was the first time I realised I had an accent. So I think your accent gets you into the room, because you've definitely got a southern accent. Sorry to let you know, you just do. So wherever you move in, you'll have that as your capital. Fish and chips, excellent. That's a great thing to think about. But look, we are very lucky that we do have the socialist north. So Manchester is a wonderful place. Come and drop by. You could also go further north as well. Could hang out in Glasgow. Wonderful place to go. And so, you know, there are some really beautiful queer enclaves. People who have sought defiance against the government that's happening here. Which I'm sure, actually, there is some of that culture in Russia. And I'd be really keen to hear from you about your life in Russia. Anyway, Soviet neighbours and all, actually. I hope you travel safe and let us know how your new journey goes, but also when you're ready to divulge the goss on Russia. I'd love to know, because I wonder if it's very different to how we perceive it. But maybe you don't know how we perceive it here, because you've been out of the English news channels, maybe. Anyway, this is very exciting, isn't it? Big fact, Ike, I'm glad you called Safe Journey Home.
Hi, Scotty. It's Care here. A long time no air. Girl, I've just finished your episode and I'm in the middle of eating, but I thought I might as well ring as well because I've just finished it. And I'm not really going to tell you what I'm eating because it's just like a tease. I'm going to try and cut and not chew too loudly. But girl, like, first of all, what the fuck are you doing paying for a bin? What are you doing paying for a bin? We put rubbish in. Put rubbish in it, aren't you? You're putting rubbish in the bin. Why don't you get it from the bin and put rubbish in the bin? Put a bag in whatever receptacle, what looks like a bin. And there's ton of rounds in the street. You just need to look for them. And when you were saying that thing, it made me think about that lovely person that was ringing. And when was that mental health first aid? I think what the podcast is that, innit? It's what you're up to, innit? It's what the pub feels like quite recently. It's like mental health first aid. Anyway, I just saw our check-in. JRF, girl's giving us a history lesson. History lessons in the JRF. Oh, always. But also, did you know that they were collecting the bundles of wood for the fires, that the bonfires were? And also the Italian version. Oops, it's just fallen off my fork. I'm going to tell you what I'm eating now, aren't I? So I've made my own kimchi. Yeah, anyway, the Italian history of faggot, or faggot of woods, or that bundle of sticks, is finocchio, I think, isn't it? Oh, I'm drunk now saying it. Anyway, it's fennel in Italian. And I reckon the origin of that in Italy was when they were burning all your bodies and doing all the fucking sinners. You know what I mean? They used to burn blobs of fennel. Yeah, anyway, do you know what I mean? Good luck with it all out there. Do you know what I mean? There's reasons to be cheerful. 1, 2, 3. And yeah, I suppose you're doing a good job, love. You know what I love? You're moaning, don't you? We all love a fucking good moan. But I'm pleased you're all alive. And you know what I mean? At the end of the day, anyone who is surviving this fucking mental health hit, fucking nightmare that we're existing in right now is my hero. So stay strong, stay true, and most importantly, stay kimchi, homemade you, pizza.
That's She's back in the room. Welcome back. Do you know what? The first half of that message, I was like, she better fucking tell me what she's eating. She, how dare you? How dare? And then she knew she was teasing me as well. What a bitch. Homemade kimchi. In which world? Honestly, the effort. Because it's got this, that, and the other in it. Honestly, I've watched the Hairy Bikers make it in South Korea with a nana, and I was like, do you know what? It's too involved. As lovely as it is, as a tradition as it is, even South Koreans do it once a year. And do you know what they say? Oh, because it needs to ferment. No, it's not. It's because it can't be fucked, because it's too much. It's a rigmarole. It's lovely, but it's a rigmarole. And so I just want to let people know that you can buy it in the shop. There you go. Why am I paying for a bin? Well, yeah, you're right. I can find a receptacle upon the streets of Manchesterford, but are those ones that have got white marble effect? And I think you're right about the fennel cornia. Actually, that's fennel ham. I don't think they put fennel ham on the bodies. Actually, I spent ages trying to pronounce this in an Italian deli once. Fienocchionia. As you can tell, my fucking Italian's awful. Lovely cross-reference there to the JRF. So we'll have to... I mean, I say we're going to have to fact-check this. It's a fucking lie. I won't. I'll just pretend, and then that's enough. And you know me, babe, love a good fucking moan. I mean, where would this podcast be without a fucking moan? Well, we'd just be one of those other shit podcasts, wouldn't we?
Okay, Scotty. So, it's a spooky scouser here. Hello. Mental health first aid is basically being trained to approach someone who is in mental distress, whether they just told you that or if they look like they need a bit of help. Like a non-judgmental human being. That's the general, you know, in a nutshell. You get trained on, like, you know, some of the more common mental health issues, like depression, anxiety, personality disorders, schizophrenia. I've said personality disorders. So I'm the person people can come to with their issues, basically, and I'll try and direct them to the right help. Like, you know, if it seems serious, do you want to go to your GP? And we can have a chat about that, or we can have a chat about something else, whatever the person wants to have a chat about, basically. But it's just teaching you how to be non-judgmental and listening skills. And what to do if there's, like, a crisis. So that's, like, you know, if someone's not in a safe position, like, obviously you don't leave them on their own, number one. Number two, you basically tell them, like, oh, how can we help you? Because they might have, like, a crisis card or something like that. And if none of that works, call, like, an ambulance or whatever, or the police. But, you know, I don't want to call the police. That tends to, like, escalate the situation more often than not. But, yeah, that's what it is. Thank you again. Yeah, everything's good. Nothing to report.
Hey, Spooky Scouser. Oh, I feel a burp come in. Wait. There you go, got it out. Now, thank you so much for picking that thread up from last week and letting us know what a mental health first aider is. That was purely my ignorance, but, you know, there would be other people listening going, what's that? And yes, we could get on the Googles or the Bings. I mean, as if anyone's searching things via Bing. Don't be daft. So I appreciate that. I guess there is... Now, what I'm about to say is not a scrutiny of you as a mental health first aider. It's a scrutiny of the systems at play that created a culture in which mental health support and provision in this country is bullshit. Because I really love this idea of somebody being able to intervene and to be able to... A skilled person who's been taught, okay, this, that and the other, this is going to what's help. But then I was just thinking at the systems at play, that's what's available to you, what tools are available to you as a mental health first aider. So when we talk about, would you like to see a GP? And what? Wait 6 weeks for an appointment? would you like to have some therapy on the NHS? oh, what, and de-traumatise myself in 6 CBT group sessions, you know, because everything can be sorted in 6 sessions. Would you like to see a GP and then prove to them why you need medication? And then once you've proven to them why you need medication, also be like, please, can you make sure that I get my repeat prescription on time and not fuck me around? And also, can I make sure that I've got the money available for those meds? Like, as somebody who's navigated these systems a fair bit, I'd like to totally hear what you're saying about not contacting the police, because what the police want to do is, because, you know, technically, you know, we have this now very modern cliche that people are like, it's not the police's job. But whose job is it? And I think the thing for me that I always come back to is this society and this government have created a climate in which people are in mental health crisis. And therefore, it is down to a governmental body or something within our society to pick up that slack. Now, yes, partially, I think our National Health Service are there to help keep us well, make us better, make us, you know, well in lots of different ways. But when push comes to shove and there is crisis, there has to be somebody else who's accountable. Now, I think police are bullshit. They fucking ruined my life. I have very little respect for the judicial system in this country because of first-hand life-changing experiences with them. And I think a complete overhaul of that system that fails so many of us is long overdue. Disclaimer. But in the current climate around what is available to us, like if I was to have a mental health crisis today and that was so severe that there needed to be some form of intervention, then it does come down to those in power. I know this is really, this is clumsy because I don't believe in that power. But I just think it's only part of the problem, right? Because if we want to radically change this place and this position, we have to change the whole culture. You can't keep on giving people citalopram or cetraline and think it's going to be okay. Structural change. Damage has already been done to many of us. That actually, I've spoken about this before, that cure is never going to be an option because we hold too much because of what generations of trauma has done to us. It has to be that radical. Anyway, who knew where that fucking monologue came from? Hopefully there's some form of sense in it. Well, actually, even if there isn't, maybe you agree, maybe you disagree. Pick up the blower, let's have a chat. Oh, God, that's riled me up the wrong way. Anyway, more to come. Apparently, note here from producer Tim, we've got the worst call we've ever had coming towards the end of the show. Oh, God. I'll brace myself because some of you, oh, who knows. Lovely message here this week on the internet from Daniel. I love After the Tone because it makes me cry and laugh in equal measure and I feel at home with a crowd of lovely hashtag queer people. Isn't that lovely? Thank you very much, Daniel. If you too would like to put out a little message to the world, we'd love to see it. You know, we rely on this being a sort of word of mouth space because, you know, I ain't got any of those celebrity people coming on and doing an interview, which is the way like a normal podcast would grow. So if you want to share this with a pal, feel free. Or if you just want to declare your love for the podcast, hashtag After the Tone POD. And there you'll find a bunch of us talking about it and be connected with us. So that would be lovely. Also, this week, Debbie and I were working together on a radio thing and we went to see our mate Matty's show afterwards. And when we sat down, a voice behind us came and went, "Hi, Fran here." Oh, yeah, we met Fran here in real life. Listen, we love hearing you all on the podcast, but we also love a sort of IRL chat, as the children say. And, you know, so if you want to wave to us on the internet, but also if you want to see us in real life, we were thinking maybe we should do a real life After the Tone thing. What do you think? Let us know. Hashtag After the Tone POD. Or you could also pick up the blower and let us know there. Just a little thank you as well whilst we're at it to our mates over on the Patreon who keep this place going. Because honestly, without you, we wouldn't be able to do this. This project, although it is small in concept, it does require a fair bit of labour each week to make it happen. And for it to in my opinion, to happen well, with curating, editing, sound design, digital marketing, Patreon Love, the works. There are currently 5 of us who keep it running each season, and the Patreon just allows for a little bit of those costs to keep the lights on. So please do consider dropping us the price of a coffee, or, you know, if you like me a lot, a glass of large wine, please, because it really does massively help. Each week, you'll get access to my notebook and a bit of backstage gossip. And if we do an IRL thing, you will be the first ones to know. Patreon.com/afterthetone. Right. I'm in trepidatious to say this because I don't know what that message from Tim means, but let's all just brace ourselves for the second half, huns.
Hi. My name's Debs. I am a long time lurker, but first time in the pub, as it were. I just wanted to send a message to respond to Spooky Scouser from the last episode, where you were talking about the fact that you'd been diagnosed with diabetes and all the triggers that came with your eating disorder. I'm so sorry you've had that diagnosis. That's shit. And I hope you're getting adequate support for both your physical and mental health through this, because it's huge, a huge diagnosis. I wanted to offer some solidarity. 3 years ago, I was diagnosed with breast cancer, and one of the first things they said to me when starting chemo was, don't put on any weight. I am a fat girl who has been, had disordered eating my entire life, and that was incredibly triggering. I would also like go out with friends or go out in public, and people say, should you be eating that? Doesn't sugar feed cancer? Or, you know, I read that you should only stick coffee up your bum one-legged whilst singing operas because that cures your cancer. You know, all that kind of shit that people come up with because they're trying to be, in inverted commas, helpful. And you're allowed to tell them to fuck off. Just as a caveat, you're allowed to tell them to fucking mind their own business, because you are an adult. You are allowed to do whatever you want and accept the consequences of your own actions, because they do not have to be you. They do not have to live your life. And so they can fuck right off. It is hard, though, especially when the medical people are telling you you need to lose weight or whatever. I, last week, had a meeting with my surgeon because I don't have breasts anymore. I am flatter than Norfolk. And I asked about a referral to getting new tits. And the answer was, we'll talk about it when you've lost 3 stone. No check-in as to whether I had disordered eating in the past, whether that was a healthy thing to say to me. Just, well, when you've lost 3 stone, we will talk about letting you speak to a surgeon. So, yeah, it's fucking shit. It's really hard to handle, because in one way you think, well, fuck them. It's my fucking life. Fuck off. And on the other way, you're stuck in this medical model that only responds if you play the game. And it's a horrible trap that we're in. And I hope you find a way to navigate it that keeps you healthy and safe. That being said, there is always the option of telling to people to fuck off. Anyway, I hope you're okay. Thanks. Bye.
Deb, welcome to the room. Long-term lurker, first time in the pub. LLFITP. Really enjoyed so much about what you said. I totally, as you can imagine, and as I think you've probably witnessed, I don't mind telling people to go fuck themselves. Oh, do you know what? I actually get quite a lot of joy out of it, because I think sometimes people don't deserve an explanation. I think sometimes you just need to let people know, you're a dick. I don't like you. Leave me alone. Get out of my face. So, yes to this behaviour. This call and reminding me of what the Spooky Scouser said a few weeks ago around fatness is making me re-engage with a conversation that I think maybe I've had on the pod in sort of different ways. It's about this idea that as a fat person, you are open to be constantly in dialogue about whether you're going to die or how you can stay alive. It's a very weird headspace to exist in, because what it creates is a fat panic that every time your body has a response, like sweating or being warm or being breathless, you just think, right, that's it, I'm dead. That's it, I'm dead now. I'm dead. But there's also this sense of, like, people feeling okay that they can let you know that you're going to die, but also other people, seemingly everyone's gone to fucking medical school and they've got ways of keeping you alive. oh, you should do this. Oh, you should do that. Oh, this is how you should say that. Go fuck yourselves is the answer for that one. Flatter than Norfolk. Now, there's a line. God, it's wild, isn't it? I'm so sorry you had to go through that. I mean, there's something about me. If I was in that room, I'd be like, sorry, are fat people not allowed breasts? I mean, how? Because when you reframe it back to them, it's so fucking ludicrous, isn't it? Sorry, you have to lose weight before you get breasts. So can I not have tits as a fat person? You know, it's so dehumanising, isn't it? To be like, I'm sorry, your body is not allowed to be in this way because I don't warrant it to be good enough. And I'm sorry, Deb, this sounds quite ugly, what's coming out of my mouth. It's because I'm so fucking annoyed by it. Oh, God, you know what? If there's any excuse to go private, if you want a tenner, I'll give you a fucking tenner. If you want to go down that route, let us know, because I tell you what, if you want tits, babe, you can have fucking tits. I mean, if I was in charge, you can have them. Anyway, Deb, it's lovely to hear from you. Please call again soon.
All right, no beds. I am a second-time caller. First time I called was way back in February this year. I was talking about my 11-year-old nibbling, just coming out as non-binary, which had made 48-year-old me consider my own gender. And I was trying to figure out that I'm probably not cis, but wasn't quite sure where I was with that. And I'm calling partly with an update on that and partly in response to the medium-term listener, Lurker, who called a couple of weeks ago, who was talking about coming out late in life. So, yeah, I think I've figured out that the closest sort of non-binary identity that fits with how I feel is demigirl, which I don't know if as a 48-year-old I can claim anything with the word girl in it, although I do still identify as a riot girl or a riot grandma pretty much these days, or a riot crone, let's settle with that one. But yeah, demigirl is basically someone who was assigned female at birth, is my understanding of it, but and identifies with that some of the time, so identifies as cis some of the time but not at other times, which feels pretty much like I am. Sometimes she and her pronouns and woman, etc., feel okay. Sometimes they really, really don't, and they're really uncomfortable, and I'm moving more increasingly to thinking of myself as they rather than she, but yeah, mixture of those. In terms of the caller who rang up about coming out later in life as queer of various sorts, and they were non-binary themselves, yeah, just trying to navigate that myself, taking my sort of time to work my way through it. The only people I've really told so far are my husband, been married to a cis queer man for 17 years now, and some friends who are trans and non-binary themselves, not yet gone beyond that because I'm still trying to figure out, A, do I need to tell people? Is it just part of me that is something that is personal for me? Or should I be telling people? Have I got a responsibility to talk about this? Probably not, but in some ways I do want people to know, but I'm trying to figure out who I want to know and in what situations. I'd be really interested to ask the room if anyone else has any experience with that. Are you out in some situations? Are you out in all situations? Are you not out at all? What feels right to you? So that's what I'm navigating at the moment, and I just wanted to ask others about that. I should probably say I've known I was queer sexuality-wise since I was, I don't know, 7 and was watching Calamity Jane, really, really wanting to be Doris Day, being Calamity Jane, and live in the little cottage with Katie.
Oh, hello, lovely person. Oh, I do remember you. You had such care for your nibbling, which was very, very sweet. Listen, second time caller, there's no prizes for second. But as a 48-year-old gender questioning person who's finding their way through demi-ness, etc., you are more than welcome to come and sit with us, please. Coming out late in life, I think there's often a stigma attached to people who find themselves at different points in their life. And I just want to say, you know, like, you find yourself when you need to. Like, there are these pressures, I think, because of, like, queer cultural cliches that make us feel like it has to be at a certain time in a certain way, and that you have to be out is another thing. So something I wanted to touch on there is when you were sort of talking about who do you tell and who don't you? essentially, like, that's up to you. I think there are these pressures that we feel like everybody must know in our lives and we must represent at all times. And I think that doesn't really ring true to me, because I think, well, safety, sometimes it wouldn't be safe to do that. Sometimes you just don't want to be a representative. Sometimes you don't want to be an educator. Sometimes you just want to get your head down and, you know this interaction isn't going to last long. And there is often this sense that you're being shamed or shameful in those moments. But I think actually that's about broader survival, isn't it? It's about being like, not today. So I love the fact that you're finding demigender, because there's also demisexuality as well, which I find really interesting. And also in solidarity as a Riot Girl here, I've made a show which is completely scored by Riot Girl tracks. So there's that. I guess I understand where you're at with in terms of pronouns, because like for me, I don't mind, like it doesn't hurt me to be called he or him. I prefer just using neutrality for everyone, just because I want to live in that world. Where am I at with my own gender is always a constant question. Like, you know, I don't feel dysmorphic with my physical body, but do I feel out of sorts with a cultural body? Do I relate to masculinity? Does masculinity alienate me from it? Yeah, of course. Of course I'm not part of that club. Of course I'm not part of that gang. So I don't know where that leads me, but over the last few years, I've sort of made peace with that. Maybe I don't need to make a choice. Maybe I don't need to define. And you know what? There's no shade to anybody who does choose that, who feels like adamant that they want to like represent at all times and that they require certain language. For real, I'm here for it. I just want to make that really explicit. I think you all know that, but I think it's important to be really explicit about that, particularly with the climate of what's going on in the UK. But maybe you've heard this conversation and maybe you thought, I want to jump in. I've got some thoughts. I've got some things that I might want to share. So pick up the blower, open up the WhatsApp and send us a voice note to this number.
0788 200 3420. And support us on the Patreon. And get backstage access to more knobheads like you.
Hi, Scotty. It's Pablo Griff from Vancouver calling. Hello, everyone else. I hope everyone's well. I thought I would call in and talk to you about Sally Jesse Raphael, the 80s talk show host with the big red glasses. When I lived in New York, I went and saw one of her shows, one of her tapings, and it was fantastic. I went there with a friend of mine, Toby and Dean, and we get into this holding tank before the show, and they tell us, you know, thank you for coming, and when you get in there, make sure you clap, make sure you smile on camera, and everything's going to be good. So we get in, and the studio is so small, way smaller than it looks on TV. It's dirty, the chairs are dirty, the floor is dirty. I'm really short, but my knees hit the chair in front of me. It was that small. And then someone came out and said, you know, make sure you smile, make sure you're happy. And then she came out, and everyone's clapping, and she starts talking about the show and about the people that are on the show. And it was, reading from a teleprompter. She's reading from cards. In between the takes, her husband would come out and say, oh, be more upbeat, but be more alive, be more happy. It was one of the most surreal experiences, because as I watched the show for many years, I didn't realize what a budget it was on. I felt like I was in like a dirty bar. It was that kind of gross, and it smelled like smoke in there. And after the show was taped, she thanked us all, but it was just so bizarre because she was kind of like a robot. And yeah, the experience of it was quite interesting. Anyway, I also went to Maury Povich, and I will call in and tell you about that story, which is even more bizarre. Okay, ta-ra.
Oh, lovely Pablo. You have lived a life, haven't you? Because I think you told us a few series ago that you used to live in the UK. Sally Jesse Raphael. Now, when we first got Sky, when I was a teenager, found the joys of Sally Jesse Raphael. What I wear. Now, if you don't know who Sally Jesse Raphael is and you live in the UK, imagine a more disgruntled Anne Robinson and you're kind of halfway there. I wear, absolutely brilliant, was a sort of like, you know, that era of like people being chat show host, but also mock therapists. Like, I'm sure Sally Jesse Raphael isn't a doctor. I'm pretty sure of it. It was like the sort of like agony aunt telly, wasn't it? That was very popular. Well, I can't wait to hear about Maury Povovich, because he's a proper weirdo, isn't he? And they do some quite grim things on that show. So yeah, I'm looking for, well, look at me. Look at me being like, oh, I'm looking forward to hearing it. Yes, more gossip, please.
Hi, Scotty. Happy Halloween. Happy Halloween to yourself, Debbie, Tim, Maya, and Kat. Calling with a question. I'm just sat here listening to the podcast, making myself some Halloween decorations out of card that I've saved from the recycling bin, making little happy, scrappy ghosts out of, with acrylic paints and marker pens. The reason I'm doing this is, I just kind of realised that, time's really flying by, not really noticing changes in, the calendar all that much. So I want to, put a bit more effort into changing up decorations and, celebrating things, making my own wee rituals and traditions. And I was just wondering if anyone in the room has their own rituals that they do, little traditions that they've made up for themselves that they do year on year just to celebrate or commemorate or really get in touch with themselves or their history or their community. I'm just really kind of curious about small things that people do. If that's a good question, I don't know. Anyways, catch you later. Bye.
Oh, hi. I think, is this Colin, not Colin? I think it might be. You didn't announce your name. But, I've got an astute ear. Now, Halloween decorations. No, I don't. But do I have rituals? Yeah, I do. And particularly cultural ones, because, I haven't been back home for a while now. And there are certain things that I like to do. Like I had a really beautiful, great wee aunt, Auntie Anne, oh bless her. She was so sweet. She was so kind to me and Mama, so kind, really loved and adored us, even though we were sort of the black sheep of the family, but, bringing the family down by being a bastard child out of wedlock, the cross in life my nan had to bear, apparently. And my aunt would every week bring down a barmbrach and a soda bread. And quite often, if I'm feeling like I need to get in touch with that, because Auntie Anne's no longer with us, and sometimes if I just want to get in contact with that, or just feel myself for a while, and not feel myself, but understand yourself, I'll get bacon, because I tell you what, there's nothing like a good barmbrack, honestly. So that's me. But what other rituals do people do? I think it's an excellent question for the room.
Hi, Scotty, and everyone. My name is Hassan. I'm a long, long time listener and first time caller. I have a poo story. Back in 2018, I was chatting with a gentleman, with a couple, and they were like, yeah, come over tonight and we have some fun time. And I'm like, yeah, okay, why not? Let's go. I'm single. So I head there. It's 11 p.m. And we had a cup of coffee, I had tea, and then we started to do the thing. But then before we went to the bedroom, when we were in the bedroom, they turned all the lights off and put a lot of perfume in the room, a lot, a bottle. I'm like, yeah, we're on the bed, we're kissing and stuff. And when I was like, yeah, I would like to sit on you. And I'm like, and do the thing. And I was like, yeah, sure, of course, I love it. Let's go. Let's do it. And he jumps on and we are doing the thing. After a while, I feel like it feels like a lot of liquid. I feel like I'm wet. It's quite a lot. But since there was a lot of perfume, I didn't realize anything. I couldn't smell. After a while, after 5 minutes, then I definitely could smell that it was something. It was shit. It wasn't just the perfume. So I say that I'm just gonna go rinse it off. It's just a little poo, doesn't hurt anyone. So I go to the bathroom and I turn the lights on and I see it's a lot. it's a lot, and it's big chunks, and it's liquid, it's everything, and a lot. So I jump into the bathtub, and I'm trying to rinse everything and puking at the same time. So it gets, it's so much. It was so much that the bathtub stuck. The water was filling up the bathtub halfway through. And I'm like, okay, I cannot stand in a bathtub full of shit, brown water. So I stand on top of the bathtub, 1 foot on each side, and trying to get everything out. And they are stuck in my, in the navel. I'm trying to get things out without touching them. And I'm very disgusted. And suddenly I hear the other one say, "You did that again." Yeah, that is my poo story. Love you. And I really, really appreciate this podcast. After the tone, it's lovely. Bye.
Oh, God. Oh, Hassan, welcome to the room. This is an excellent, excellent story. And I don't know what Tim was on about it being the most disgusting call we've ever had, because I think it's the most fantastic story we have ever had. If there was a prize, you, Hassan, would definitely win this. Long-time listener, first-time caller, welcome to the gang. Oh, you've done it again? Oh, wow. Do you know what I really loved about this story, Hassan? Is that, like, it, for all of its graphic detail, for all of, like, just being able to envisage, like, that moment of you being like, okay, this is a lot of shit. Like, you told it in such a polite way. We learned so much about you and how you are evidently a very nice person, because you told that story with such finesse that I thought, Hassan is a classy customer. Oh my God, you definitely win all the points for this week. Well, I think we're all changed after that. Do you know what I love about this place? No holes barred in more ways than one. We have gone around the houses, haven't we? We have spoken about Russia. We have been over to Vancouver to talk about Sally Jesse Raphael. We have spoken about gender, mental health crises, and we have welcomed to the room the lovely Hassan. Thank you so much for everyone for calling in this week. I have had such a hoot. And remember, we have got a talent show coming up. If you've got a talent, however loose... Oh God, this is too much. Or however brilliant, you know, you might be good. Make sure you give us a call, because for the end of season talent show, we would love to include you. But also, if you've picked up any other threads that you're like, I want to jump in on that, I want to tell you about rituals, I want to tell you about things that I do to feel connected to my culture, I want to talk to you about mental health, I want to talk to you about fatness, any of those things that we've been speaking about this week or other, all you got to do is pick up the blower, open up WhatsApp, and send us a voice note to this number. 0788 200 3420. And please do consider to join in on the Patreon, patreon.com/afterthetone. It would be greatly received. Right, on that note, I think I need a little lie down. Have a gorge week. See you next time.
After the tone, leave your message after the tone.
After the Tone is hosted by me, Scotty, produced by Debbie Kilbride, vice producer Tim Bano, assistant producer Maya Miller-Lewis, digital producer Kat Prill. ATT is a Debbie's production.
Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.